You recognize that music. Maybe you grew up in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. I know I did. One of the things that made Mr. Rogers so popular across generations, across racial, economic, and political divides was his ability to make everyone feel welcome, all right? I mean, when you watched his show as a kid, you weren't just friends, you weren't just children, you weren't just boys and girls, you were neighbors. And if someone were to ask Mr. Rogers, who was an ordained Christian minister, by the way, but if they asked him, just who is your neighbor, I think he would answer in much the same way that Jesus did in the parable of the Good Samaritan, and that is, my neighbor is anyone. Now, I want to welcome you to our video stream of this week's message. You're not just a friend, all right? You're not just ladies and gentlemen, and you're not even just neighbors. Right? You're family. Right? You are brothers and sisters, and I want to welcome you home. You see, Easter is a time when family gets together, especially after a year like we've had, we need to gather more than ever. Now, most of us have a place that we call home, a place where we feel at home. And I don't just mean your home address, it's home, right? Now, sometimes home isn't even where you live. I think most of us have been through at least a season in life where home was somewhere else, right? Maybe home was grandma's house. Your parents were going through maybe a difficult time in their marriage. And so you lived for a time with your grandparents and that became home to you. Or how about when you went to college, right? You go off to school, but home, well, is still home. I remember when I was in college, you know, and I would try to make some weekend plans with friends, or I'd ask a girl out on a date and they might respond by saying, well, I can't this weekend because I'm going home. All right, we all lived at college, but home, well, that was someplace else. Well, what is it that makes home home? Right? Is home primarily a place? Right? Is it the town where you can get your favorite ice cream cones? It's where you cruised on Friday nights. It's the place that fills your memories, right? Is it a particular place, a particular house on a particular street in a particular town, right? The place where you can kick back, crack open a cold one and watch your favorite team. The place where you know where every pot and every pan and every wooden spoon, and you have every spice and every seasoning to make your favorite recipes, all right? It's the place where your meals are legendary, the backdrop for every great family memory. Is that home? Or is home in the stuff, right? Your favorite things that fill that place, right? The things that you're sure to take with you when you move to a new place, all right? Your home, is it defined by the things that define you, right? Your posters on the walls, your music coming out of the speakers, it's your books on the shelves. It's your man cave with all of your mementos and memorabilia, all right? That signed football sits in a case right over there, right? The game-worn jersey hangs on the wall, right? And on that wall are all your favorite album covers, right? And back there, the biggest deer you ever shot, the biggest fish you ever caught, and don't forget about the chair, right? It wouldn't be home without the chair. You see, our homes are filled with the things that are a reflection of us, right? Family heirlooms passed down through the generations, antiques picked up at countless sales, collections of knickknacks and doodads gathered over the years, things that reflect your sense of style, Right? Your life story is told in all of those things. Have you ever walked into someone's home for the first time and you looked around and you think, wow, this is definitely Susie's place? I mean, it's exactly what you would think of, right? Or maybe it's kind of the opposite effect. You walk into a place for the first time and you are completely surprised. You learn something new about someone you thought you knew. I never imagined that Bob would have, you know, that. Well, this all comes from the things that fill our homes. Now, all of those are important. And I think there's certainly a part of the picture of what makes a home. But I think for most of us, home is more than a place, and home is more than the stuff. Home is in the people, right? The sound of the footsteps that come running when you walk through the door, right? The laughter that you would recognize anywhere, the voice that greets you, the face that smiles at you, the lips that kiss you. Home is the people that listen to your stories and laugh at your jokes, and they tell you when you're being an idiot, but they love you anyway. These are the people that just simply fit you, right? Like your favorite pair of jeans. You've just worn each other in, even if sometimes you wear each other out. You see, sometimes they're also the people that break your heart, right? They are the people that can make you cry like no one else. That's home. Over the years, my wife, Teresa, and I, we have lived in 6 states, in 4 church parsonages, in 1 apartment, and 4 houses of our own. And one thing that I have learned in all that time is that home is wherever she is. Right? Home is where we are together. Several years ago, when we moved to Oklahoma, Teresa was finishing up her business degree in Millikan University back in Illinois. But I had to go ahead and start my ministry down in Oklahoma. And so for several weeks, she stayed in a friend's garage apartment, and I was living in the house in Oklahoma. And it was just a house until she got there. And when she came, that's when it became home. Well, I want to talk about home this morning. In fact, I'm going to be talking about home over the next few weeks in this series that we're calling Welcome Home. And I want to welcome you home, all right? Especially if you've been away for a while. And I want to remind everyone why church is home. See, home is more than just a shelter for your body. It is a refuge for your heart. And I want to talk about your heart's true home, that place where your soul can find rest and peace and love and belonging and security. But first, I want to flip the question around, all right? Let's come at this from a different direction. What makes God feel at home? Have you ever wondered about that? What makes God feel at home? And when God has thoughts of home, what does he think of? Right? Does he think of a heavenly throne room? Does he think of thousands upon thousands of angels? Does he think of a golden city bejeweled with precious stones? Well, when God thinks of home, I think much like us, we are made in the image of God, remember. For God, home is more than a place, and home is more than the things. Home is all about the people. And here's what you need to understand. When God thinks of home, he thinks of you. Now, I don't mean that in some sort of flippant, disrespectful way, and I certainly don't mean it in some sort of arrogant, egocentric, sacrilegious way, as if it's all about me and it's all about you. But I mean it in terms of relationship. It has always been God's desire to dwell with his people, right? His heart is with his people. Go all the way back to the beginning. God creates man and woman. He puts them in the Garden of Eden, a paradise where they can dwell in perfect fellowship with God and be at home with him. Remember, Adam was created on the sixth day. And do you remember what God did on the seventh day? He rested. It was a Sabbath, a Shabbat, which means rest. And the Sabbath was not only a day of rest, but it was a day of worship and a day of being with God, a day of relationship with God. So Adam, in his first full day on planet Earth in the garden, it was a day of rest and fellowship with God. But then we lost that home when Adam and Eve were deceived into questioning the goodness and the truthfulness of God. And they were unfaithful to the God who made them and who loved them. The story goes along until we get to the people of Israel in Exodus 29, after God calls the children of Israel out of Egypt, right? And he takes them to Mount Sinai, all right? And he sets them apart and he creates a special covenant with them. And here's what God tells them in Exodus chapter 29. I will dwell among the people of Israel and will be their God. And they shall know that I am the Lord, their God, who brought them out of the land of Egypt, that I might dwell among them. I am the Lord, their God. The whole point of God calling one nation out of all of the nations was so that he could have a family with whom he could be at home and dwell with them. And that word dwell has to do with where you set up your tent, right? It's where you make your home. Remember, Israel at this time was a nomadic people. They moved from place to place and they lived in tents. And this is God saying, I want to pitch my tent with you. Right? I want to live with you. I want to make my home with you. And that's exactly what God did. He pitched his tent right in the middle of their camp. I'm putting on the screen a chart, a map of the arrangement of the Israelite camp according to Numbers 2. And as you look at that chart and all where all the different tribes were, where does God put his tent? Right, the tabernacle. That's what tabernacle means. It's tent. Where does God pitch his tent? Right smack dab in the middle. And God tells them, I am your God and you are my people, right? My family, my home. And that was the whole point of the temple, which came later, to make a dwelling place for God to dwell in the midst of his people. In Psalm 132:14, speaking of the temple, God says this, I will live here, for this is the home I desired. The problem was that Israel kept wanting to make their home somewhere else, right? Their hearts kept chasing after other gods, right? And this is why the Old Testament prophets so often use the language of sexual unfaithfulness to describe Israel's idol worship, right? They wouldn't keep their devotion at home, right? Instead, you would find them in the temples, in the houses, the homes of these other gods. But the whole time, do you know what God's heart was? Do you know what God's desire was? To be at home with his people. Even as Isaiah the prophet promised the destruction of the temple and God is going to abandon his home, God also has Isaiah foretell of the birth of a child who would be called Emmanuel. Now, I know it's Easter, but think back to Christmas for a moment. What does Emmanuel mean? God with us. God with us. God's desire is still to be with us. Now, the idea of God coming to dwell with us, that becomes the vocabulary of the Apostle John in his gospel in describing the coming of Jesus. John 1:14 says of Jesus, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth." Right? Again, God is coming to dwell with us. And this time, he's doing it in the flesh, right? Not just symbolically, not just metaphorically, not just spiritually, but physically, his presence dwelling with us. And that word dwell, again, is this idea of God pitching his tent in our midst. Jesus the Son came from the Father and made his home with us. God is once again making his home with his people, and this time he's doing it in the flesh. Later on, Jesus makes this point even more clearly in John 14:23. He says, "If anyone loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him." Now, understand what Jesus is saying here. He doesn't just want to live across town. He doesn't just want to be your next door neighbor. He wants to live with you. He wants to make his home with us. And it becomes all the more intimate and all the more personal later on when we see God pour out his Holy Spirit on the day of Pentecost. And now God is no longer just walking with us and listening to us and living with us. He is living in us. The Spirit of God dwells within you if you are a follower of Christ. And your life becomes the very home of God. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 6:19-20, "Do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you?" Right? You become the temple, the dwelling place, the home where God lives. He makes you his home. To the Galatians, Paul would write about the indwelling Spirit. He says, "God has sent forth the Spirit of his Son into your hearts, crying out, Abba, Father." Now, Abba is a very intimate term. Right? This is what a child would call his father. It's like daddy. Right? He's not just the old man upstairs. He's not just a heavenly father who is far away and distant. He is our daddy father who sent his spirit to live in us. Right? This is the language of family. This is the language of home. Now, here we are, but 15, 20 minutes into an Easter sermon, and I haven't even talked about Easter yet. So what does any of this have to do with the death and the resurrection of Jesus? What does any of this have to do with Easter? Well, in John chapter 14, it's a part of what we know as the Last Supper. This is Jesus' final time of teaching with his disciples before his death and resurrection and ultimately his ascension, right? And one of the things Jesus is trying to do in this last moment with his disciples is prepare them for his departure. And here's what he says in verses 1 and 2 of John 14. "Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house, there are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go and prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also." Well, a couple of things here. First of all, let's talk about the many rooms for a second. Now, if you grew up in the church years ago, you grew up with the King James Version of the Bible, you learned this verse this way: "In my Father's house are many mansions." And I remember when I first went to Bible college and began to study the Greek and learn about original languages, and I learned that the word used here is really many rooms. I was kind of disappointed, to be honest with you. I was like, And I don't just want a room. I want a mansion. You know, I kind of viewed heaven as this great suburbia in the sky, and we'd all get our own McMansion, you know? But in thinking of heaven that way, I was completely missing the family nature of what Jesus is saying here. Right? So let's walk through the front door of a typical first century family home. It's a mud brick house built on a stone foundation. You walk through the front door, it's a wooden door, and you're going to find a room that's got wooden pillars in it, wooden supports, and these hold up the wooden beams of the ceiling. And depending on the wealth of the family, this room could go from pretty small to a larger room. But the pillars, the supports kind of divided into different sections. All right, so over here on this side, it's kind of a work and storage area. All right, it's where all the tools and utensils, and it's where all the clay jars and clay pots are kept that store all their stuff. The olive oil that they use for cooking and lighting and heating, and there is all the different grains, the flour and stuff, all of that's kept over in this section. Over on this side is where you would keep your family animals. And I don't mean your dogs and your cats. I'm talking about, you know, a donkey, a goat, that sort of thing. Yeah, the animals lived with you. And believe me, there is not a Yankee candle that's made that would get rid of that smell. Right, but in between these pillars here, there's a central area, kind of a central courtyard, and there would be a fire pit there, and there would also be a cistern where you would store your water. And then along the back wall would be what was called the long room, and this was the main living area. This is where everybody would sleep, all right? So the only privacy you got would be from hanging some fabric or a hide to kind of subdivide this into sections. Now, on the outside of the house would be a staircase going up to the roof, and they would all have flat roofs. And during the milder months, the flat roof would provide kind of a secondary living space, additional room to work and to eat and to sleep, that sort of thing. Now, as the family grew and the children got older and they would get married and have kids of their own, obviously not everybody could live in this one room. All right. Now, if you had a daughter, she would be married off and she would become a part of another father's household. But if you had sons, they would get married, they bring a new daughter-in-law into the family, and they would have children, and typically they would remain a part of this household. And what would happen is they would add additional rooms onto this family structure, or they would build an additional house right next to it. And so a lot of times you would have several family structures, several houses, several rooms, all kind of oriented around a central common area. And it would all be a part of this extended family. And so the picture that Jesus is painting here in John 14, and what he's telling the disciples and what he's telling us, is that your family, right? You're brothers and sisters. And so I'm going to go back to my father's house, and we're going to add more rooms so that you will have a dwelling place, a home in my father's house. You'll be a part of the family. So here's what we've got. God's heart has always been to dwell with his people, to be at home with his people. And so God literally put his tent right in the middle with them, all right? God sent his son to dwell in our midst, all right? God sent his spirit to live in us. But Jesus ultimately gave his life, and he conquered death so that one day we could go and dwell with him. God made his home with us so that in eternity we could go and be home with him. So Christmas right? Christmas is all about God making his home with us, but Easter is all about God making a home for us. Christmas is all about God dwelling with us. Easter is all about our dwelling with God. Jesus conquered death so that we, so that you and I could go and dwell with him. And the Bible ends on this very point. Revelation 21:3 says, "And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying," and this is in heaven, this is in the New Jerusalem, this is in eternity. He says, "Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God." Right? We'll be family. This is what God thinks of when he thinks of home. Right? And it also tells us this is where our heart's true home is. Home ultimately is an expression of our heart's deepest desires. Now, we all have many desires, all right? I want that chocolate chip cookie, right? I want to lose 10 pounds. I want a drink, right? I want a new car. I want a day off. But here's the thing about these desires. They can distract us. They can deceive us. They can even dominate us. But underneath these superficial desires, we have our true core longings, right? These are our heart's deepest needs, right? So there is a longing for love, right? To be loved by somebody who knows us fully and gives themselves to us completely. There is the longing for purpose, to know why we're here. There is the longing for understanding, to have someone who gets us and knows us all the way down. There is the longing for security, to feel safe and protected by a strong defender. There is the longing for significance, to know that our existence matters more than just existing. There is the longing to belong, to find a relationship with someone who doesn't just accept us, but they want us. Now, these core longings find their expression in the best of all that home can be. And I believe deep in every human heart, there is something that longs for home, even if we've never known that kind of place, even if we've never had that kind of family, we still crave it. We still need it. Now, we may not know where to find it or how to live it or how to keep it if we ever did. But oh, do we want it? We want to belong. We want to be wanted. We want to be loved. We want to be home. And these deepest longings find their ultimate satisfaction in God. He is your heart's true home. Home is more than a someplace. Home is more than a something. Home is a someone. And that someone is your creator and your savior. And Jesus is God's invitation to your heart's true home. Jesus is God's way of saying, this is where you belong. Jesus is God saying, come home. And when it comes to your heart, when it comes to your soul, home is not a where, home is not a what, home is a who. Jesus is your heart's true home. And your soul will be restless until it finds its rest in God. If you're looking for a home, if you need to find your heart's true home, find it in Jesus. And if you've never found that home before, then I want to welcome you home, right? Send me an email, all right? Shoot me a text, make contact with me, and I would love to help bring you home, to help make you a part of the family. Have a blessed Easter and welcome home.